international programs which are looking at tomorrow's vaccine, tomorrow's deaths, where Indian groups are also involved. Some of them even go to the extent of saying, let's forget about this IPR business, it's killing us, let us go for open source discovery. We will share everything, like basic research, we will do it without worrying about IPR. So even those kind of initiatives are being taken up now. So it's not limited to one group of people. That was an illustrative example, but it is taking place in several other sectors of science and technology. Again, you may ask, okay, you all gave examples of science and technology research. What about the corporate sector? The best example was given by Ronam Narasimha, the aerospace sector. But what are the general trends in the corporate sector? Of course, we started off with R&D outsourcing. It's cheaper to do R&D in India, and good quality people are available. Why shift a fellow all the way to Silicon Valley and pay for his travel and then pay him dollar salaries, ask him to work in Bangalore, but ask him to do what I want him to do, R&D outsourcing. Started off like that. Then they realized that there is no point in giving small jobs to small groups. Let us have offshore centers for R&D. GE is a standard example. That's not the only example. I understand that something like 200 centers are in existence in the country, in different parts of the country, where we don't even know, but they're all offshore centers for R&D. Even that is becoming difficult, because when you have an offshore center, you have to pay him, and you have to pay him for a commitment. You cannot throw out a fellow when he has no work, and you are not bringing in a fellow when you want him. On the other hand, research is done by people who know that it cannot be, who don't know that it cannot be done. A new invention comes in the mind of a man who doesn't know it cannot be done. That community exists only in the universities. The students, they don't know what cannot be done, therefore they will try it out, even however atrocious it is. And they are the ones who will make new inventions, and you cannot have a very large number, even if you have a very large offshore center in India. So partnerships with academic and R&D institutions become extremely important, even for R&D centers of companies, multinational companies. That is also started taking place. Suddenly you find an IBM center in IIT Kanpur, Delhi, or some other center in Institute of Science. These are all reflections of this. So clearly, the message I would like to convey is the globalization of R&D is not limited only to basic research or technology in the futuristic domain, but even in the corporate sector, where you need to count money tomorrow, because they are answerable to the stakeholders, the money is by the shareholders. I was surprised to see one article, Trends in Global R&D. This is published by Bethel in 2007. And I was amused to see that India is next only to China as a preferred destination for R&D investments. The question which is specifically posed to those companies, the multinationals, is if you have $1 to invest in R&D, where will you put it? The maximum number said China. Slightly less, India. Everything else is behind. Okay? At least if it's India, China is close to 50, United States is about 20. And there are other countries, they will not put their money at all in R&D. Okay? What are the reasons for that? There again list about 20 reasons why they like to put it in China and put it in India. One of them, of course, is the ready availability of qualified manpower, and to some extent a relatively stable system, the political system, administrative and political system. In spite of all the negative sides which we have on the political system, it is still seen as a strength by many countries, because there is no major violation of IP rights. They are not afraid that it will be stolen away. People have a higher level of loyalty to the institutions, and people have a higher level of commitment to the work they do, the work culture. Question we have to ask ourselves is, what are we doing to become number one? How can you go beyond China? You may also ask, should we become number one? Is it a good or bad thing? I said with all, with pride, that we are number two. But you may think that it's not good for us. That's something which you will have to ask yourself. But I would like to strongly suggest you read this article in the Trends in Global R&D. You will get some enlightenment out of that. Where are we in terms of R&D in the area of global R&D? In summary, rich or poor, name of the game is cooperation. It's no longer competition with either you or me or you above me or you below me. No. It is cooperation. Cooperate while competing and compete while cooperating. Depends how you assess your own strengths, how you assess your own weaknesses, and how do you optimize your overall benefit to the country. That is what Boeing has done, that's what Airbus has done, and that's what we should be doing also. We must recognize our strengths, we must recognize our weaknesses, and we must evolve a strategy, which is a policy matter. That is why I think we started off saying that we need to have put in place a strong policies. But if you do that, you have no boundaries. World is a playing field. It doesn't matter where you are, what matters, how to get a visa, all those things are immaterial. We can still be emerging as a global leader. I think that's what we should try to do. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. We'll now open the floor up for questions. Perhaps we can start with the center people who always seem to come in second. Anybody wants to ask a question, just draw my attention and I'll make sure that you have a chance. Yeah, please. Yeah, please, sir.
Sir, I am Pandey from BRC. Sir, as you, in the beginning of your talk, you mentioned about M.Tech program offered by some university in nuclear science, and there were not many applicants for that. I would just like to little small mention of it, but in fact, nuclear science and technology, sir, as you yourself can, pioneer in that area, it is integrated of almost all basic sciences, as well as engineering sciences, right from either you talk of basic chemistry or basic physics or engineering and technology. Perhaps people's perception about nuclear science and technology may not be that proper to understand. I think nuclear science and technology, I would like to, being from DE, mention that no branch of science and technology perhaps is untouched by this such a complex and complicated technology, nuclear science and technology. With regard to, sir, nanoscience, I would like to say, I am not a man of nanoscience, but I can understand it is just a little fancy terminology nowadays. Of course, we are going to say that we are entering into this present era, is our future era, is our nanoscience. But I don't know what is the state of scenario in our country with subject to nanoscience and technology, sir, at present. I would like, sir, your comment on this.
In the first instance, I completely agree with you. I am also a trained nuclear physicist, familiar with the nuclear science technology scenario. And the reluctance of the young students to come in is partly, in fact, solely because of the lack of information on what it means and what opportunities it offers as a career. You know, the public perception is playing a major role in this. Our great friends went and changed nuclear magnetic resonance imaging to magnetic resonance imaging and felt they have made it safer. This is the public perception, and you have to change. So in fact, when we have discussed this in several platforms, the first thing we say is that there is a need for a very aggressive outreach program to convey to the young students what it is and what it offers. The second thing is, a 50-year-old industry will not be glamorous. This is a ground reality. How to address it? That's an issue which needs to be discussed. We have addressed it in the past that we recruit our own people, and we have successfully managed our program, but that in the process, we have made the rest of the people totally ignorant of what it means. That you and I know that nuclear science and technology is not only nuclear physics or nuclear technology, a lot more goes with it, but the man outside doesn't know it. We need to do something about it, and that has come about because we sort of decoupled ourselves from the university system. Now I'm glad that the DAE system is coming closer to the university system through the Hombawa University and then several other programs, but it takes 5 to 10 years before the impact is seen. As far as nanotechnology is concerned, nanotechnology, we all know what it is, what it can do, it has so many things, but so many promises are there. But a student sees as a glamorous thing. You know, they go by the glamour, not by what is actually the true implication of that technology. So they see who is the godfather for nanotechnology, how big is the man, how well he is known, These are the issues which matter, not nanochip technology. So my feeling is that for mature technologies, public outreach is extremely important in today's world. Okay? New technologies, they will find its own equilibrium. They will come and go, like IT, a stage will come where the bubble will burst and then it will stabilize. It's not IT went to zero, but it only stabilized at the right place where it should be. Yeah.
Atmanan from National Institute of Ocean Technology in the Ministry of Earth Sciences. I think you are aware of our institute and things like that. One of the important aspects which we are facing in our country is lack of quality manpower for research institutes like ours and many other institutes also. So even though we have got really good quality manpower, because of the various policies of the government, they tend to go to US and abroad. Of course, if you see IEEE publications, you can see many of them are Indian origin people, but unfortunately they are not available for our work. So this is a problem which is not being addressed, even though this is a real major problem which we have been facing for the past 10 years, even though the IT is not a sustainable thing, I mean, but people are going to that. So what are your views, or what rather we should do so that we will be able to attract manpower.
Again, we are coming back to the same issue, policy changes. You know, when I was Secretary of DST, we used to have in Wadia Research Institute in Dehradun, three people who are specialists in glaciology. Okay? And one of them retired. And we said, okay, let's fill up that place. We need the next generation. We have not groomed the next generation. So after he retired, we started looking for the next generation glaciologists. And then there was a government order which says that if one fellow retires, you cannot recruit. You need two fellows to retire to recruit one fellow. That means next generation there will be two glaciologists. After that there will be half a glaciologist. And there won't be any glaciologists 10 years down the line. Then the whole world, we also joined them to say glaciology is extremely important for monitoring our global climate change, and we must put a lot of effort on that. Lot of effort is not a lot of report generation. Lot of effort is not a lot of money. Lot of effort is not bringing in experts from UNIDO or United Nations, World Meteorological Organization. No, you have to nurture your own people. And we issue an order, government order, in superseding of all previous orders, no vacant posts will be filled. Doesn't differentiate between science and non-science, doesn't differentiate one area from the other. So we were leaders in meteorology at one time, we don't have leaders today. We had a major program in glaciers and other natural resources. We don't have them today. So these are the consequences. We have to change it. It will not change by itself.
You had a question there? Sorry. That one of us, please.
Yeah, sir, you said to be self-sufficient, you know, emphasis was given for reverse engineering, license manufacturing, and import substitutes. But if at the same time, if we do not concentrate on frontier technology like nano and bio, will we not be left behind?
That's why we are doing. After 90, that emphasis is gone. Today, nobody talks about import substitution. Nobody talks about reverse engineering. People talk about IPR, respecting IPR. That's the change which has taken place today. Definitely, yes.
Yeah, we had a question here.
Kamal from ICT Hyderabad. I'm just trying to get some comments from you in general. As you rightly pointed out, we have been global, rather the globalization took place in R&D much before. And we have been doing a lot of projects with international collaborations. What we observe is many a times in such collaborations, the results have yielded very well. Compared to what is carried out in some sort of collaborations within the country or within the institute. What could be the reasons for this?
I would say that when we partner with some other major agencies, our discipline is much better. Whereas here, when we have a national agency and we have a national programs, except in those institutions which have built that kind of accountability like space or atomic energy, you have problems. You don't hear about a delay in launching because things are not ready, right? But that also is happening in India. But when it building 20 toilets somewhere, there is a delay of 1 year. And I was amused in some R&D institution, which was sanctioned in 1999 with a budget of 30 crores. The first scientist is yet to be recruited and the buildings are already ready. Can there be a lopsided planning on such institutions? That also happens in India. So these are realities which need to be corrected.
Yep, ma'am.
Regarding this, since you are in the planning commission for so long, and this is regarding the students that we train and generate an intellectual workforce, I see that our policies in education have been very political most of the time, including starting with the kindergarten school education, the kind of institutions and the monitoring, the kind of institutions given away to minority communities, and the level of type of monitoring of the syllabi and implementation of teachers, minimum requirement of teachers that are recruited, they are all lopsided in different, and now we have mushrooming. First it was autonomy to colleges, now these colleges are becoming universities. And I don't see what kind of an UGC regulation that they are being imposed on them, and what kind of quality students are being churned out in these universities.
See, there is a fundamental requirement. This country has always having the problem of deciding between quantity and quality. We want to educate everyone. Our resources are not enough, so therefore we try to compromise on the quality and try to increase the quantity. When you try to compromise quality, it compromises everything. How do you address this? Some of us, at least like I feel that even in United States, every university is not identical. There are quality institutions, there are average institutions. So there is no reason why this country cannot also say, well, I will not bring in the same quality across the board, but I will allow some institutions to impart quality education and some institutions under rest of the institutions, a bare minimum must be guaranteed to everyone. Both need to be addressed. One might ask, with limited resources, can it be done? Now, you imagine the country announced 7 IITs, 10 universities. I shiver within, because IIT or a university is not a group of buildings for which you give the budgetary allocation, it will be built by the contractor. It is a faculty. Where do you get the faculty from? Today IITs have 30% vacant positions in the faculty. Now you create another 10 IITs overnight by an order, and then you increase the number of students by another factor of 2 over by a pen order, which means the people who sign that paper do not understand what they are signing. But that's a reality. What can you do? Okay. So we have an eternal battle of maintaining quality while catering to the quantity. Okay. You can't say that some people will not be given education. But the thing is, can you still maintain? My belief is it is possible, but you cannot get votes by doing such things. If what decides how education will be given, we will be where we expect to be.
He planned some kind of a reverse brain drain.
It's already happening.
No, see, I mean specifically to these institutions that have been created overnight.
Yes, because you see, today CSIR has said that they will have about 100 positions for people who are willing to relocate themselves from elsewhere into this country. But that's not the only requirement. They must be top class in their profession. But if they want to relocate themselves, these positions will be available. IITs are trying to do that, bring back faculty as much as possible. So, and today with the kind of situation which is existing in countries like United States, number of people are also thinking that that maybe it is not a bad idea to go back. What Rotem was saying, he gave half of my talk. On one side is reward excellence, even at the cost of equality. That's one methodology which US follows. We are saying, forget about excellence, equality is more important. That's the other extreme. The optimum is somewhere in the middle. You cannot have to go to the extremes, and both are failing. So I hope our leadership will recognize that and try to find a mean, the golden mean for this.
Yeah.
Well, sir, I'm Ashish from Kolkata. what we are seeing over last one decade, that the most meritorious students, at least by marks, they are going into IT industry or they are doing MBA and basically going into a higher salaried job. But eventually we are losing the bright students in science and technology or research. Even those who are coming into research, half of them is going to USA or elsewhere and serving the other country. So I think there should be a major policy change required, and what you are doing in that respect.
I agree. See, Mathematics Olympiad. We have been participating in Mathematics Olympiad for almost 20 years. In the last 20 years, there is not a single year where the boys have not come back without a gold medal. They always have had a gold medal, and they have been doing extremely well. First, good news. Second news, none of the boys took to mathematics. They all ended up doing computer science or some other science in IITs. None of them took mathematics. That's second news, bad news. Third news, almost all of them ended up, because they're all bright, they ended up in the United States. Some of them came back into mathematics. They did PhD in mathematics in MIT or one of those prestigious institutions. Good news. But then after PhD, they ended up in one of the financial institutions. That's bad news. Right? So you see, this is the ground reality. Now, we are not in a position to offer what one of the financial institutions offers. Right? So we don't get them. But slowly the message is sinking in, even among the young students, that, hey, this is not the kind of thing I want to do, right? So even in this country, science enrollments are slowly increasing. Still not how much we want, that is not anywhere near in sight. But the fact remains, the IT fellows have learned their lessons. People are saying that, why am I doing here? What am I doing here? You see the aerospace, the aviation industry, lot of young, good quality students have gone into some aviation training institute and ended up there because they all get 1.5 lakhs and a nice uniform to wear. They say, forget about the higher education. Why do you want to go BSc, MSc, PhD, all those things? Now the message is sinking in, well, these are not stable boats. Let us get a core competence for myself. So some things happen. Parents like you and me are responsible for 90% of the miseries. You let the students alone, they will choose. But we don't allow them to choose. So, something will happen. No, not at all. It's too big and a complex a problem. And there are too many players in this.
Yeah, Professor Amurthy, you gave a very good example of CERN collaborating with Indian resources and also the universities. But nowadays, the trend is reversing. We find that GE, like companies like GE, Alcoa, Battle, all they're coming to India and opening up their own R&D centers. Obviously, they don't have the national issues in their mind. I mean, our issues in their mind. They certainly have their own technology that they have to market.
A company is answerable to their stakeholders. They will have their interest in their mind. You cannot expect that GE will have India's interest in mind. But India has to find out what we can draw out of their presence in India. This is what is important, right? And this is a poker game. You have cards which God has given, which are your strengths and which are weaknesses, and you don't cry over the cards, you play. That is exactly what needs to be done even in the R&D sector, even when you face the multinationals. So ultimately, if GE is going to depend only on their own R&D engineers employed in Bangalore, it is not a sustainable proposition commercially. They have to partner with Indian institutions. And when they partner with the Indian institution, the dialogue is two-way. If they learn from you, you learn from them. Okay, they employ 1,000 engineers. I have 100,000 engineers. So I don't think it is a threat in itself. But we have to respond, you see. You have to play the game in the way in which it needs to be played. And we have to recognize that it needs to be done.
You know, what we always normally find, the way they are functioning, what they try to use the Indian resources for the application of their own technologies, and then they try to market it because they don't have much resources, neither in terms of experience.
I can share with you.
Yeah.
When the GE started a few years before, number of people went there. Good number of them have also come back. okay? A good number of them are also interacting the Indian community with or without the knowledge of GE. You, as I said, knowledge is in the brain. Okay, when he is on the road buying sabji, can you stop him from talking? He cannot. And not everything is documented. Suppose I ask you, hey, I am looking at the solar technology, I want to put aligned carbon nanotubes. Okay. If he has aligned carbon nanotubes and made a soda Voltaic, he cannot disclose it to you, because then he will go to jail for giving out the secrets. But he can tell, hey, when you use nanotechnology, don't use cadmium. That is not listed anywhere. You see, always across the world, successes are recorded, patented, protected, publicized, rewarded, everything. Failures are hidden within. And failures are the stepping stone for success. And if this guy, when buying sabji, tells me, don't do that, nobody can catch him. He is telling me because I am his friend, he doesn't want me to waste. I have saved 3 years of R&D time to learn that one, relearn that one. So, nobody can stop free flow of information. You can put some barriers here and there, but in my own view, that there is no 100% proof barriers on knowledge. That is where is going to be our strength. When GE operates here, I'll say, come here, then I will know what GE is doing from these boys. Okay? So, I don't think we should worry about it, but the fact remains that if you, no point in saying GE is not worried about India's economy. They will not be worried. Why will they worry about India's economy? We will not worry about Indian economy.
I'm Sundaram from IIT Madras. In one of your slides, you were mentioning that the new demands on the R&D system will be market-driven and basically technology-driven and market-driven. Are our scientific institutions geared to meet this new demand?
Not fully. The reason is when R&D is responding to a technology pull, it invariably requires a strategy, multiple inputs, multiple groups to work together, which needs not just the interest of the scientists, but mechanisms to bring such people together. You may recall the office of Dr. Chidambaram, Principal Scientific Advisor, they have put in place a program called Research for Automobile Industry. Okay? Futuristic materials, control systems. Sensors and actuators, all related to automobile, but not today's car, but tomorrow's car. Initially, it was all only three professors from three different institutions. Today, almost all automobile leaders are sitting on the table and discussing. You say, no, this is not what we want. This has been tried by somebody. This is how we will want to do it. So that has become a major part in which all the ideas are mixed together and the scientist gets a better feedback from that. That is not taking place in all segments today. I've been saying, for example, two days before, there was a major advertisement from the Ministry of New and Renewable Energy that we want proposals on R&D related to solar energy. Good idea, good initiative. Does it bring people? No. But it doesn't tell you what is required. But on the other hand, you look at scientific journals, somebody may be working on solar energy through photovoltaic, somebody must be working on catalysts and hydrogen production, somebody may be working on super lattices and better heat engines using the junctions. Now, each one is a different line of this. To say for fundamental research in this area, without bringing people together and working as a team is not as effective. But we have not still learned that art of doing it. It's an art.
And this will have to be the last question.
Sir, I am from Jodhpur, Kadri. In science, one of the major indicators of our progress is through scientific journals, publication. Repeatedly for several years, when we look at our major scientific journal, popular journal, Current Science, where it records the nature of our publication, it's not going up. It's not a good sign, at least. Still, we are having, through DST, several policy reforms, etc., at government level, institutes, all. Even funding is perhaps increasing now. But quality of research, or the quality publication, and secondly, the relevance to common man, is perhaps not improving. And if one of my colleagues have suggested the education system, the way it is going, it may decline and we may perhaps lose our footing in the scientific field.
It's true there are indicators which don't put us on the top of the world, very true. If you want me to defend the system, I will say that if you look at the publications per dollar invested, then we are not doing very well. That means you don't put money, you know, even in institutions like IIT, you won't believe that less than 5% of the total budget goes for R&D. Remaining goes for regular infrastructure and routine activities. So our inputs in R&D has not been very high. So that is for defending. But on the other hand, you may say, well, that's a weak explanation for what, is a post facto explanation for what you are not doing. But what are you going to do about it? How do you raise our the quality of the publications? Now, yes, that is something which needs to be addressed to. That's something which we need to retrospect and see how we can improve the quality of the publications. As a scientist, I believe the quality of publication depends on the quality of scientists. So the best way to improve the quality of publications is to improve the quality of scientists, because there is no way you can improve the quality of publication from a scientist from outside. It is his mental capability. So we have to get the good quality scientists. That links us back to the educational system. So it's a nice social system which is linked from end to end. And we have to break it somewhere and raise the level of this.
We'll have to call this session to a close as well. I'll request Sri T.K. Mitra to convey our gratitude to Professor Ramamurthy.
Yeah. Sir, you gave excellent presentation, very deep insight into the subject. You informed us in clear terms the meaning of globalization by quoting very simple examples linked to our day-to-day life. You have also told us how every aspect in the life has changed by globalization. It is not only market and economy. And you have touched one very important area, that is a knowledge management and particularly knowledge preservation. I know it is very important because I'm also involved in the knowledge preservation in one of the committees in IAEA for the nuclear reactors. Okay. And you have quoted that example of NASA and all. And you have also told about, you know, that the participation of international program, corporate R&D, these are restless and all. Okay. Sir, overall it was a wonderful presentation, and it's my great pleasure for me, and I'm very happy because you are senior to me in my department, much senior to me. It's a great pleasure for me for proposing that vote of thanks on behalf of all the participants. And thanks a lot to all the participants for this wonderful discussion. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Professor Ramamurthy will be joining us for lunch now, so we can carry on this discussion there, and we'll meet again at 3 o'clock.